circular formations?
And they used task force formation system, which was a very good idea.
A task?
Task force. You have a task force, task group, task unit. You know,
and
they were all tactical operational units, which had nothing to do with the administration. The administration was done by the destroyers, Atlantic, or that sort of thing. So they had some, in my opinion, very good, and in fact, basically, of course, the NATO ended up adopting all this. Mm-hmm. But we went through that process of training these people at this stage again. Up until the time when we got into the hassle of volunteering for the Pacific, and that really was a political decision which didn't do the Navy any bloody good at all. It's like one of these things.
When did that happen?
It must have been just about DE Day.
Okay.
Just about after DE Day, they said anybody going to the Pacific has to volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I just went through that process, and this day then I got married in March of 45. I was scheduled to take a ship to Japan, or the Arctic, and the war ended.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way this should end.
Okay. Sure. Well, I got one general question, if I can. I'm kind of saving this for my end question, but historians have the advantage of being, you know, picky and choosy, picking and choosing what sort of information they want to focus on.
Yeah.
And my question for you is, do you think that historians in looking at the RCN have ever overplayed any aspects, or perhaps there's something that you feel that they've perhaps underplayed certain aspects of convoy life, and specifically?
Certainly within the Canadian venue, the Canadian, you all get dozens of books by various people. In a way, there tends to be an overplay in comparison to the total naval picture. Now, I'm not sure that you're going to convince Canadians or Americans that the North Atlantic Battle is any more important than the Pacific Battle, and this is a good example.
Okay.
And indeed, in the RN, the AB Cunningham men, the Mediterranean people, and they were quite a separate breed of cats from the people who, A, were in the home fleet, and B, in the convoy system, and C, in the Burma, the Indian Ocean.
Yes.
So, within that context, yes. On the other hand, it is fair to say that the effort that put forward by all the people involved in this game was really considerably beyond within the convoy thing what either the Brits or the Americans put in human effort.
Mm-hmm.
Our dilution, and I don't know whether dilution is the right word, mm-hmm. but the expansion, you know, from 4,000 to 100,000 in that short period of time, and in ships, was way beyond what happened in the Americans and beyond reach in the Brits. The Brits had a tremendous call of knowledgeable merchant service and retired service to call them. For example, in Lafori, the Captain D, Tubby Hutt, and he had three DSOs, mm-hmm. so there's nothing puny about this guy. He was in his 40s. His first attempt was Johnny Kimpton, who was the same class as Debbie Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
And Debbie was running a destroyer while Johnny was still a first attempt.
Mm-hmm.
All of the navigator, my good friend Andy McCulloch, the gunnery officer Hawkins, Tort Ryan was killed. All were older and senior to me. In other words, there was a tremendous difference between, say, Haida, and here's a comparison thing. The manning of Haida, you look at Haida in 43, and you look at the 4 in 43, you'll find that the knowledge and experience of the people. We only had two reserve officers in that damn jail.
Is that why people were moving around all the time, to try and share the knowledge then, or?
Well, nobody was trying to share the knowledge. The real problem was to man the ships. The ships were coming off the ways, and this, we're talking about corvettes and then frigates, faster than we could train people to man them. And that is so. So, within that description of the manning problem, we had enough good volunteers to volunteer. We had good people to do it, and the Canadian sailor was as good as any. No question about that. We just didn't have the capability to train them and give them the experience that the, particularly the Brits had. The Americans went through a tremendous expansion too. It's rather interesting though, they kept the guys in the same ships. That was a peculiar, I don't know whether it's so now, but you would find people who'd been in the same ships in the OSN for 5 or 6 years. That just didn't occur in either the RN or because of the way our promotion system. Theirs is different. If a guy wanted to stay in a ship, he stayed there. So, the people who tried to write the story, you want to be very careful about some of the books that have been written on this subject.
Very true.
If you go back to the ones that were written right after the war, like Shull and Lamb, Corvette Navy, I think, Hal Lawrence was a much more honest approach, but most of those books were written basically on interviews with sailors from the war. And they got a particular view. Some of it, I remember I was doing research into the Louisbourg, the sinking of the Louisbourg, because I was there the night Louisbourg was next to us on the screen of it. And when we went into the research that were written in the articles about the Louisbourg when it was sunk, they were all very far from the truth of what actually happened. So you can say the same about me, maybe. As the various things happened, were analyzed, and let's be honest about all of these events, both the personnel problem and the technical Zimmerman there, he's written a technical problem about Ottawa, and that's not a true portrayal of the scene at all. But anyway, he's entitled to his view. They are looking at it not necessarily with a biased point of view, but they're looking at it without getting all the right information. And I think you'll also have to agree that in many areas, the 30-year thing has changed the information that's now available. Up until the 60s, it was very hard to get information about the German side of the coin, you know. It took years for all of that stuff to go. It's just beginning to come out now. Donuts and his side of the coin. And that was tricky. And the security problem, the Canucks security thing put a great limitation on the information about the HFDF stations and the tactical side of that coin. That's all fairly recent. So that's the answer to your question.
Okay.
I think it's fair enough to put the emphasis on it because there were a lot of Canadians involved in it. You get into a problem about talking about Halifax, which is a very difficult problem to talk about.
True.
A, to Haliconians, and B, to the rest of the country. And see the sailors and the wives who were there at the time. It was a strange setup, which, as far as I can recall, didn't occur anywhere else.
Okay.
The funny part, it didn't occur in Newfoundland, and yet the circumstances were rather the same.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to add, or?
I wanted to say one thing, and I suppose you were talking about the Canadian scene. Mm-hmm. And the effort the guys expended. But putting it in context, this L-class destroyers, which I joined, there were 8 of them, the iron-built destroyers in 8s.
Mm-hmm.
And they were much better than the tribals. They were designed after the tribals. Mm-hmm. And they commissioned in 1941.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to the Med, there were only 4 still afloat, all of which had been sunk by enemy action in the Med. When I left, there were only 2 afloat. And although one was so badly bombed by one of these missile bombs, the Loyal, so the only one that's of the 8 that survived between 1941 and 1945 was HMS Lookout. In some cases, the loss of life in those ships was heavy. In LaFoy, 246 men, I guess there was 37 pirates.
Mm-hmm. Can we stop for a second here?
Yeah.
So you just wanted to add it on to that?
Sure. I think I'm exactly wrong in the word just.
I believe, if I can maybe
push
along, you're saying that the role that we had, the RCN was delegated, the duties we did.
Yeah.
You're talking about, I believe, that we did it well and we are somewhat perhaps luckier compared to some of the other duties that the other navies
mm-hmm.
have been.
Mm-hmm.
Do you tell that's a fair thing to
yeah.
say? Okay.
You got it on or off?
Yeah, it's on right now.
Okay.
It's on. But why don't I just...
Well, okay. Well, I just wanted to continue this story. That there were a large number of people who gave their lives in navies in various parts of the world to a degree which I don't think most Canadians understand. And the loss of life in those 6 L-class destroyers, all by enemy action, all of the Mediterranean, was really quite high. And you can find many Canadian radar officers who served in RN ships in the Mediterranean who indicated similar sort of experience in the casualty list. This is not to decry the loss of lives that we lost. Canada had in the Battle of the Atlantic, but let us keep it in proportion to the total overall picture.
Well, I believe that's a good way to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to thank you for your time today, Admiral Charles, and hopefully I believe this information will be a great help to myself and to future historians. So thank you for your company, for your coffee, and this wonderful view out here at this house. It's quite amazing. Thank you.